Hello, everyone. Welcome to Latter-day Struggles. This is your host, Valerie. Happy to be here today. And I am so happy to be by your side today, Nathan Hammaker. Hi.
Hello. How are you, beautiful?
Good. I was just thinking as we were getting ready to record how grateful I am for you. And so why not say so right now? I just don't think that I could do this podcast if I didn't have your support.
Oh, that's sweet of you.
No, I mean that. I really mean that. It is a lot of work and it's a lot of mental and emotional effort on my part. And so to know that you are both with me, like physically sometimes, and also just cheering me on is incredibly, incredibly meaningful for me. So
awesome. Well, always, yes. always on your team.
I know that. I feel that. So today we are going to begin a four-part series tackling a really important topic, one that Nathan and I have sort of brought up off and on in the context of other topics over and over again, actually, in the last couple of years since we started this podcast. And the topic is the sacrament. And as is typical, we started talking about it. I have been wanting to do this series for many months now, which is kind of nice because what that means is when I have an idea in my mind of something that I feel the tug to talk about, I start taking notes on my phone as I read things. I just have a topic, you know, sacrament. And every time I read something, I will document the book I've read it in and where I can go back and find it. And so for the last few months, I've been really, really thinking about this and compiling some thoughts and feelings. And then as Nathan put his thoughts and feelings and the things he's been reading together, next thing you know, we have a four-part series. This is going to be so fun and such a rich conversation, we hope, and one that we hope strengthens your capacity to find hope and healing in the concept of the sacrament, and of course, to make it your own, because we believe that so many of these principles that we talk about on the Latter-day Struggles podcast, they're value neutral, and there are ways that they can be used to really, truly help us come closer to God and to our higher powers and our higher selves. And there are also ways in which these things can be used for ill and to damage our souls and in sometimes spiritually abusive ways. And so we're going to sort of be actually covering the gamut, talking about all of these things in the hope that we as a Latter-day Saint and surrounding community can become more and more psychologically and spiritually healthy and whole.
Amen.
All right. So what we're going to do today is we're going to just give a little bit of a background on the concept of the sacrament. I always think it's kind of nice to set the stage and to set up our conversation that really pertains to our own religious system in a larger spiritual or religious system context. And then we'll kind of go from there. So let's go ahead and start with that. So the sacrament, we call it the sacrament in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Other places oftentimes call it, well, I'm thinking specifically of the more sort of traditional Catholic traditions. They have called it they still call it the Eucharist, the Holy Communion, or just communion. The sacrament or communion is practiced in many Christian denominations from my own research. And by the way, Nathan and I, in planning for this, we are not religious scholars. We are not theologians. And so what we're doing is a very broad overview. And we're not going to go deep into this because we don't have the credentials to go deep into this. But we do have the credentials to jump online and to look at some broad things and package and share them with you in a way that kind of helps set the stage. So the religious traditions, among others probably, or the main ones that practice this are the Roman Catholic, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Anglican, Methodist, and some Reformed Christian churches. And in general, most of these churches sort of agree on one sort of large thing, which is that the participation in the bread or in the bread and wine or the bread and water is an outward sign of an inward grace instituted by Jesus Christ. So I'm going to pass this over to you, Nathan, to just talk a little bit about the connection between the Passover, which is, of course, Jewish in origin, the Passover and the sacrament, and how we've kind of adopted this from larger Christianity here in the LDS Church. So take it away, babe.
Sure. So, okay. So let me start by just saying this, that Valerie and I have had some discussions on how much scripture is literal and how much of it is metaphorical. So I'm going to speak from the perspective of a traditional Christian view of the scriptures. But going back, the Passover originates with the story of Moses, the children of Israel being in bondage in Egypt, and Moses asking Pharaoh nicely to let the children of Israel out of Egypt, and introducing several different plagues as a way to motivate the Pharaoh to release the children of Israel from Egypt and let them return to their promised land. So one of the plagues that Moses was instructed to introduce to Pharaoh was this destroying angel. And the idea behind the destroying angel was that on a certain appointed night, the angel of the Lord would come through all of Egypt and kill the firstborn in every household, unless you took the blood of a firstborn unblemished lamb, sacrificed the lamb, and put the blood of the lamb on the doorposts of your home. And if the destroying angel who was walking through the city that night saw the blood on your doorpost, then your firstborn child would be spared. This was called the Passover. In other words, the destroying angel passed over the homes of the observant Israelites. And every year after that, the Jewish tradition, or the Israelite tradition, was to celebrate a feast commemorating their firstborn being spared, while the firstborns of most of the Egyptians would have been slain. So fast forward several thousand years, and Jesus is living in a Jewish society that is still practicing the observance of the Passover and celebrating this event. And it is the night before he is arrested and taken and judged and eventually sent to his crucifixion. But in that Passover that he is celebrating with his 12 apostles, he introduces something new to them called the sacrament, where he broke bread and blessed wine and asked them to eat and drink in remembrance of him. This was not originally part of the Passover meal, but it's something he introduced at this time. And I don't consider myself a scholar on this, so to say, you know, what is the connection? Only I'll say this, that traditionally Christians believe that the blood of the lamb that was put on the doors of the Israelite families was supposed to be symbolic, a symbol pointing them forward to the sacrifice of the Messiah, the sacrifice of Jesus. So the blood of the lamb represented the blood of Jesus. And of course, the sacrament also represents the sacrifice, the death and the blood of Jesus Christ. Again, this is according to traditional Christian theology. And so the connection would be that both events, both the Passover and the sacrament, are supposed to point us to the mission and a sacrifice and what's commonly referred to as the atonement of Jesus Christ.
Thank you. What I'm struck by, Nathan, is that it's fascinating and so important for us always to keep in mind that Jesus was not a Christian.
Right.
Jesus was Jewish. And what happened there in the Last Supper was Jesus sort of introducing a sacred ritual during an already existing sacred ritual.
Right.
Right. So he was taking the Seder, or the Last Supper. Well, what he was doing is he was, it happened to be over Passover. Whether or not that is coincidental or completely intended that way, I don't know. I think there are scholars that have different opinions on that. But the fact of the matter is, it was during the Passover feast with his apostles in the upper room, right before the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, that he introduced this first communion. And Christianity has taken this concept, and that has, and clearly it has become integrated into the vast majority of Christian traditions, that we in some way, shape, or form pause to remember Jesus Christ and to remember and connect his atonement, his crucifixion and resurrection, and to connect that with blood, with keep saying blood, with bread and wine. Or in our church, of course, we use water. So very, very interesting. And I think it's pretty cool to kind of think about, again, our roots go way, way back, long before Joseph Smith had, you know, the first vision or whatever, and that we are very much a part of a larger Christian tradition as it when it pertains to things such as the sacrament. So something else that I wanted to just sort of bring up is that I really am interested in the legacy or the age of Judaism and Catholicism. These are very, very old, well-established church traditions. And so I think they have a lot to teach us. Much of what has evolved in Protestantism and then, of course, Mormonism comes from our Christian roots that go clear back to Catholicism. But the Catholic Church recognizes 7 sacraments. And I thought this was very interesting as I was planning this and learning this. We call the taking of the bread and water the sacrament. The Catholic tradition actually calls it the Eucharist because what they actually also use the word sacrament, but it means something completely different to them. In the old Catholic tradition, they have 7 sacraments. And these 7 sacraments include baptism, then the Eucharist, then something called reconciliation, confirmation, marriage, holy orders, and the anointing of the sick. Now, I am not educated enough as a religious scholar to be able to talk at length about any of those, but I think it's important to recognize that when we talk about the sacrament in the LDS tradition, we are talking about the bread and the water. In the Catholic tradition, the sacrament is 1 of 7, and they do also participate in something that is similar to what we call the sacrament, but it's called the Eucharist. I think it's just good for us to have a sense of context and that we take these big ideas, such as the participation in some sort of an embodied eating experience and drinking experience, and then each Christian tradition, not only do they interpret that different ways, but they participate in different ways. And then the interpretation also seems to go in all sorts of various different directions as the decades and centuries pass by.
Yep.
Anything you want to add to that,
Hunter? Well, spoiler alert a little bit on something we're going to talk about, but the idea of limiting a sacrament to one particular ordinance is something we're going to discuss, and how the Catholic view might be a little healthier when you start to see the sacred in lots of different places, right? The sacred, the sacrament in more than one ordinance, participation, location, et cetera. So, little spoiler.
Great spoiler. And yes, he is absolutely right. We are going to be integrating quite a bit from the Catholic tradition. And the reason why is because I've mentioned this in the last couple of episodes, not even connected to this topic, but I have been deep in the works of Gregory Boyle, who is a Jesuit priest, which is a Catholic order of priesthood. And I find him to be a true prophet. And I love this man, and his work is brilliant and inspired. And he has a lot to say about the Eucharist or the sacrament. And therefore, what you're going to be hearing quite a bit comes from some of the books of Gregory Boyle, Jesuit priest. And yes, he does talk a lot about our expanding view of the sacrament and how healthy it is to expand our understanding of what the sacrament can be. Catholics take it from 1 to 7, and he's actually saying, why are we stopping at 7?
Yeah.
Let's keep it growing.
And to the Catholics' credit, I mean, they are the oldest tradition that has maintained these sacraments. So much of what I reference as well comes from my own study of Catholic scholars as well. And it's not because, you know, I'm a Catholic in embryo, but it's because Catholicism has the longest tradition. They've done the most study. They've done the most teaching and integrating of these principles. And they've got a lot of good things to say about the nature of the sacrament.
Very beautifully said, Nathan. And you actually really set the table for the next thing. Oh my gosh, what a great pun.
Oh,
you set the table for the next supper. So he set the table for the next thing that I want to talk about. Hello, dear friends. As you probably know, I love creating the Latter-day Struggles podcast for you. I am so committed to providing you with frequent, honest, psychologically sound content to help you find faith, peace, confidence, and direction in your faith journey. However, I need your support. The content and the demands of this podcast have made it necessary for me to give up my previous work as a private practice therapist. As a way for you to show your support and gratitude for my work, I invite you to become a paid subscriber to this podcast, which will give you access to all of the Friday episodes. All Monday episodes will continue to be free of charge because I want you to be able to continue to know what we're exploring each week here on the podcast. So for only $9.99 a month, you will not only continue to receive the content that has been so pivotal to your faith journey, but you can also help ensure that I can continue to serve this community. Your small cumulative contributions are already making such a difference. And also, you will be honoring the dedication, education, and commitment of a female Latter-day Saint professional who is brave enough to ask to be valued monetarily for her professional contribution to her community. Information on how to subscribe, information on how to become a monthly patron through my Patreon account, and also information on how to make a one-time donation through my professional Venmo account can all be found in my show notes at the bottom of each episode. So thank you so much for your ongoing support and trust. Now, back to the show. The Catholic tradition is really, really interested in and has really maintained the importance of ritual and of ceremony. And that's something that I quite enjoy. I think the participation in and better understanding the nature of ceremony, religious ceremony and otherwise, is actually really, really important. And the reason why I think it's important, or I enjoy it, is because I have learned a little bit about and find a lot of value in better understanding the neuroscience behind ceremony and ritual. So there's something very, very archetypal, which just basically means, for some reason, if you cross time and space and tradition and culture, people like ceremonies. We like to pause in our normal everyday lives and participate in rituals. And I have a lot of things I could say about that. I won't say them all, luckily for you, but I will say just this much. Ceremony is very important because it helps us mark the sacred nature of our lives. It helps us recognize periods in our life that we want to pause and notice, because there are openings and closings and beginnings and endings. And ceremony is the way that, as human beings across time and space and tradition, we mark these sacred things, these sacred occasions. And so the Catholic tradition gets that. They see the value of and the importance of ceremony. And there's something really sacred about taking the sacrament and looking at it from the perspective of ceremony. Okay, let's just spend some time on this. So it's an embodied ritual, right? Meaning that I dare say that independent of what tradition one participates in, if they participate in the partaking of the sacrament, everything sort of stops and people pause and they eat bread and they drink something. Okay. And it's a time for them to pause and reflect, and they are participating in a ritual, in an event.
Right.
Okay.
And by using their bodies, what it does is it brings your whole person into the present moment, right? Because your mind and your body are both focused on the event that's taking place. And so it becomes a moment of presence.
Great. Yes. Wonderful. Yes. So what he's basically describing is neuroscientifically informed, meaning this, that the way our brain most effectively works is when we are able to integrate three things: the body, the mind, and the emotions. So when ritual is performed in a way that is deeply integrative.
I think so. Yeah.
I do too much reading and then I don't know how to pronounce words. When it's integrative, these rituals or these ceremonies, they sink deep into our souls. And we are more able to connect with our higher power and our inner divine. And so the sacrament has the potential to integrate through our emotional state, through the way our brains are able to be activated in terms of like what this means. And because our bodies are actually participating in a ceremony, like if all of this goes well, we're integrating all three of the means by which neural pathways are created to truly connect us to the divine. Now, can this go sideways? Of course it can. Everything can always go sideways, right? So this is the deal. Sometimes if we take a ritual and we do it too often, or it's been handed to us and it's never become part of our own identities and it's not a part of our own meaning systems, rituals actually can have the opposite effect. A ritual can become, we can be doing the same thing with our bodies, but it basically turns our brains off and our emotional states are not connected to the meaning and the feeling of deep connection and communion with God, it can become very, very robotic and very, very meaningless. And so that's why ritual can be very, very powerful and meaningful and potentially really, really connecting to self, others, and God, or it can actually do the very, very opposite, which is why we get to determine for ourselves ultimately what is valuable in terms of worship ritual. Any thoughts on that as I kind of break down the neuroscience of, did I do a good job of explaining that, by the way?
Fantastic.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let me just say one last thing, just to emphasize in case I possibly didn't do a good enough job, because I'm a little nervous I left something out. The way the brain learns is by embodying experience. And anyone that hangs out with me at all as a therapist or a coach or a group, you know, a group member, whatever, knows that we need to use our bodies to embody or practice the ways that we want to become. Insight is not enough. Insight is getting us off the starting block. And the way we actually evolve and change is by experiencing and practicing with our bodies how to become different. And so the sacrament, by embodying a ritual, gives us the opportunity to find deep worship. And by the way, we're going to go into this much more deeply later. If the bread and the water, for some reasons, doesn't work for you, that's okay. There are other means in which one can be in an embodied way worshiping and experiencing something sacred like the sacrament, because I will be continuing to use this word over and over again. The word that I particularly like the most when it relates to the sacrament is the idea of communion. Mm-hmm. I love the word communion because it means to come together, to come to a common space that embodies love. And so can participating in the bread and the water, sort of the original means by which communion was introduced, can that be sacred? Of course it can. Does it mean that's the only way that we might commune with self, God, and others? No.
No, and as you're saying that, I'm having these images come to my mind. This is a really great topic. I'm having these images come into my mind of some of the most powerful experiences that I have seen are with great artists. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking like a piano player who just has a passion for music, but you see in a performance that bringing together of the mind, the body, and the emotions in a piano performance, or in a great dancer, or even a great athlete who's in the zone in their particular sport, that mind, emotion, and body all coming together into that present moment where they can almost feel that little seed of the divine expressing itself in an experience that requires the use of all of your different faculties that you just described. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
It really is pretty cool stuff. And what I hope we're kind of picking up on as we share this time together, everyone, is that we are so incredibly sacred, and the means by which we express and experience the sacred through the mind, the emotion, and the body is by default going to be different for each and every one of us. In some ways, it's like in spiritual traditions, they give us an idea, maybe a template, like try this. This is how we pause and experience, or kind of can model a ritual of connecting the mind, the body, and the emotions through the eating of bread and wine or water. And we want it to be meaningful for you. And we hope to create a space where this is meaningful. And of course, we're going to go way more into that, like, because it can be meaningful and it also can go the other direction. But it's just a model. It's symbolic of what we can take and use to become deeply connected to God ourselves through ritual. Mm. One last thing I'll say on this topic is the eating of food. If you'll notice, if you think about some of the most tender and meaningful and precious moments that you have shared in connection with people that you love, is over food.
Yeah.
It's by breaking bread and drinking water or wine or whatever with people that you love and care for. I think that is not a coincidence that when we are in deep connection, sharing food with our bodies, laughing, smiling, or having deep and stimulating conversations, that in and of itself is a sacred, sacred experience. It's an extension of the sacrament that was instituted by Jesus Christ at the Last Supper. Any thoughts on that, Nath?
I love that because I mentioned previously that I finished listening to Richard Rohr's lectures on the New Testament. And he points that out, that not just in Jewish tradition, but as part of actually the perennial tradition, the perennial tradition, meaning spiritual beliefs and practices that you can see across time and cultures, that food is actually deeply tied to so many different types of ritual experiences. And it's for what you just said, that it is and has been for, you know, thousands of years of human history, the way that we connect with each other is over meals and drink.
And it may be that this is why there's something so powerful about, say, for example, a Thanksgiving dinner or a Christmas meal, or, you know, you and I, we tend to veer towards food oriented date night. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while we don't, but
wings in your man cave during a really important game.
Yeah. That we incorporate food as something that both that feeds the body, of course, which we are wired to be, you know, interested in and enjoy because it's existentially important to us, but it's also a way to bond with and connect with people around us in a way that is important to our, not only the existence of the growth and sustenance of our bodies, but the sustenance of our souls. Mm-hmm. So something just to kind of keep in mind, while also hoping to share and shine a light on the fact that because this is the model, it doesn't limit it to that being the only thing that can be sacramental. Okay, so what I want to do just as we kind of close this episode up today is there is quite a lot that we are going to be covering in the next three episodes. And so I wanted to reserve a little bit of time with you all to just share what we're going to be going through in the next three episodes, because there is a lot. So for episode number two, we are going to spend some time deconstructing the concept of setting apart. Now, I know here in the Latter-day Saint tradition, we talk about the setting apart as if it's really a good thing. And the more I study and the more I read about this, the more I am convinced that setting someone apart is the actual exact antithesis of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so we're going to look at how the concept of setting apart is integrated in almost every aspect of the sacrament, whether it be those who participate in the preparation of it, those who can take it, those who cannot. And so therefore, the setting apart is a big deal. A second part of setting apart that I'm going to have us talk about is that sometimes we limit the scope of what sacrament is. And we've already kind of started sort of touching on that, but we're going to go much, much deeper into that in our second episode. Okay, then when we move to the third episode, we're going to spend some time talking about ways in which, unfortunately, the concept of the sacrament has been misappropriated by institutional religion. We, of course, are familiar with our own faith tradition here in the LDS Church, but I want to make very, very clear, as I have read about this, this is a common problem amongst many other faith traditions, that faith traditions often use the sacrament as a reward and punishment system. In some ways, it must again be something that just sort of happens insidiously as the decades and centuries pass. Something as potentially healing as the sacrament can be used as a means of wounding and control and manipulation by the institutions that govern the taking of the sacrament. So we're going to be talking quite a bit about that in our third episode. And then finally, in our fourth episode, the final one of this series, we are going to be talking about the actual experience itself of administering the sacrament, everything from the rules around administration, the exactness of the prayer, some of the sort of, I would kind of go so far as to say some of the false traditions of our parents or our fathers in this case, around the administration of the sacrament, how I think sometimes we get lost. And this again is not intentional. I don't assign any poor motivation to this, but we do want to shine a light on places where we have taken something that is potentially healing and can bring us closer to God. And it actually estranges us by getting too caught up on the rules, the wardrobe, the wording, and some meaning behind and we're going to actually be talking also about some of the ways that the wording in the LDS sacrament prayers themselves can lead us into a belief about a transactional God. And that will be our fourth episode. So as you can see, we have just started down this road to get us all going on this big topic of how to become in healthier relationship with the concept of the sacrament here in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Is there anything else you want to add as we close up and keep this ball rolling, Nathan Hammaker?
I have nothing else to add. Let's keep rolling.
Okay.
I'm excited.
All right. I really love all of you. I'm really, really grateful for each and every one of you. I know so many of you through my processing groups. And it's so fun. Since I've been doing these for about a year and a half now, I know so many of you. And you're my people. You're my friends. And I just deeply appreciate having faces to match with names. I am really, really grateful for those of you who have been kind enough to pause and rate and review this podcast, because it helps others see that we are a loving, kind, and generous, trustworthy source. We love this faith tradition. It's part of our bones. It's part of our heritage. We care deeply about helping it become healed and more healthy. We care about the families in and around the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that is why we put ourselves out there to talk about the things that sometimes are uncomfortable or taboo in our tradition. We really, really care about helping us become a healthy faith tradition. I really appreciate those of you who have subscribed to this podcast. As many of you know, this is the main source of my income, as I've needed to stop my private practice because of the content and the rigors of this work. So thank you, those of you who have subscribed to the podcast. And if you're interested in becoming more involved in my Latter-day Night Live series that are once a month on Wednesdays, please jump onto latterdaystruggles.com and get involved and register for one of those. Also, look into when my next group start. I'm not running as many right now, but I am running a few, and I want you to be a part of that. Thank you so much for all that you do to support me. Whatever feels right to you, I am deeply grateful for, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dialogue Podcast Network.